Welcome to the All Sides Reporter Roundtable, where we catch you up on the political news of last week and preview the week ahead. I'm your host, Anna Stever. Today, I'm joined at the roundtable by Karen Kassler, bureau chief at the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Good morning.
Good morning, and I apologize. I'm a little hoarse. Turns out screaming at the top of your lungs at your baseball team for two nights in a row is not really good for the vocal cords.
Yeah, I won't ask you about how that went. Also at the table is Aaron Glynn, state government reporter for the USA Today Network Ohio Bureau. Welcome back.
Good morning.
And Daryl Roland, politics and investigative reporter for ABC. Happy Monday.
Good to be back, Anna.
Polls show the economy is a top concern for Ohio voters, but in the final weeks of the U.S. Senate campaign, ads on transgender rights are dominating Ohio's airwaves. Republicans nationwide are pushing the issue of transgender athletes and whether minors should access things like puberty blockers and hormones. Here's an attack ad against Sherrod Brown from the Republican Senate Leadership Fund.
Brown backed Biden, voting to let transgender biological men participate in women's sports and supported allowing puberty blockers and sex change surgeries for minor children.
Senator Brown's campaign has released an ad in response. Here it is.
Voted multiple biological men.
Trans. What if I told you all of this was a lie, a complete lie, and Bernie Moreno knows it? The truth is, in Ohio, this has already been banned. And Sherrod Brown agrees with Governor DeWine. These decisions should be made by local sports leagues, not politicians.
We can verify the claim that Brown voted to let transgender biological men participate in women's sports is false.
I'm Sherrod Brown and I approve this message.
Karen, before we separate the fact from the fiction in these ads, why are we seeing so many of them in the first place?
Because I think it's an issue that Republicans have decided is a winning one for them. For instance, Democrats have been talking about reproductive rights because they've decided that's a winning issue for them. So I think that's it's not the only issue that we're seeing in this particular race, but it's certainly one that I think Republicans have decided is one they want to talk about and they think they can win on.
Do you think to a certain extent, Daryl, that they're playing to the margins here? But I mean, in extremely tight races where small shifts matter, margins move the needle.
Yeah, everything matters sort of in a race that's been essentially deadlocked, is essentially deadlocked and has been for weeks now. The bigger picture answer to your question, of course, is this is the most expensive Senate race in the country. Some are saying this could make history as the most expensive race in the U.S. history. I don't know if that's inflation adjusted or not, but be that as it may, anyone who has a screen already kind of has an innate sense that there's a whole lot of talking going on. And, of course, it's a key race for control of the Senate. Who has the pen as Senate Majority Leader? It's all on the line. So, yeah, transgender, there's some mixed poll results about that. As Karen said very astutely, Democrats want to have the playing field be about abortion rights. They think they have a winner there. Ohio just enacted it in their constitution last year. Republicans want to talk about wedge issues like this and immigration because they feel they have the advantage of that. That's where they want the playing field.
What I found also really interesting, Aaron, both Moreno and Brown are spending a lot of time in central Ohio. Brown was back in Delaware last week. Moreno went to Westerville for a Get Out the Vote campaign. It looks like the Columbus suburbs, not Cuyahoga County, is where this election is being fought this year.
Yeah, well, central Ohio is growing. It's an important...
We have more registered Democrats now than Cuyahoga County.
Right, and I think candidates, are trying to see and be seen out here as they try to get the vote out.
As somebody who's been covering politics for a long time, Daryl.
Wait, who's this question going to?
Well, it could have gone to you or Karen,
well,
actually.
That's
so
true.
Either one. But is it strange to see that shift from, like, let's get out the vote in Cuyahoga for Brown to I'm going to plant myself in Columbus?
I suppose this will be regarded as not a swing area. I mean, Columbus is about as blue as you're going to get. The rural areas, not immediately outside Columbus, but maybe one county away, the exurbs. Very ruby red. But you look at the suburbs here. I covered a Sherrod Brown event up in Powell at the Fred Astaire Dance Studio.
There you go.
We thought We thought we might have some entertainment from the sitting senator, but I guess the polls.
Well, he didn't tap dance.
I know.
Missed opportunity.
We were crushed. But so he's right there in Powell in Delaware County. He's talking about reproductive rights. He's bringing out Hope Task, former chief of staff, and some other Republican independent voters to back his stance on abortion rights. Why is he doing it there? Why is he doing it in Delaware County? Because Delaware County voted pretty substantially for
that. He voted
almost
exactly like the state for the reproductive rights amendment.
On the other hand, Trump carried the county by 7 points, which again is roughly
where the
8-point margin of the state. So that would seem to be their calculation. This is a swing area.
I am so curious to see what the turnout is going to be in Delaware County, Karen.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it shows that obviously Sherrod Brown and Bernie Moreno are fighting for those votes in the middle, the moderate votes. And I think Sherrod Brown has decided that he can appeal to those voters. He's been doing that, I think, just to try to get more moderate voters to join. He needs those votes. And Bernie Moreno needs to hang on to Republican voters who, you know, voted for Trump by 8 points in 2016 and 2020.
Brown also picked up an endorsement from former Republican Governor Bob Taft over the weekend. He's from one of the state's best known Republican families, but I don't know, does Taft make a difference these days?
Well, it shows you one of the moderate voters who's out there who is hoping that he can convince other Republicans to not vote for Moreno. I mean, I hear a lot of Republicans saying, I didn't leave the Republican Party. The Republican Party left me. And so maybe I think that's who Taft is primarily speaking to, is older school, more moderate Republicans who really have rejected Trump. And obviously Moreno has tied himself very closely to Trump. So
another unexpected campaign issue that's come up is the Cleveland Browns moving out of Cleveland. And Sherrod Brown tried to tie Bernie Moreno to the move since the Browns owners have donated to the Moreno campaign. It was an interesting choice. If you're mad about Brook Park, vote Sherrod Brown.
Yeah, we saw Sherrod Brown double down on social media over the weekend saying that the Browns absolutely need to stay in Cleveland.
Yeah, it's funny that, I mean, look, I guess like we said earlier, this campaign is probably going to be won on the margins. So if somebody is honked off about the move and decides to vote for Brown, like, that's one more vote.
Yeah, I think you'd get a lot more if you could solve the quarterback problem.
Oh, geez. Well, unfortunately, one solution was determined yesterday.
Yeah, that wasn't it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's getting to be incredibly expensive. Brown's campaign accepted nearly $31 million between July and the end of September. That is a lot of cash.
Like Daryl said, this is the most expensive U.S. Senate race in Ohio history and one of the most expensive in the country. I mean, just watch commercial television for a little while and you'll see where all that money's going to. And I mean, I think a lot of people are experiencing that with the sporting events, you know, Ohio State games and Cleveland Browns, Cincinnati Bengals football, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, these are not cheap spots that are being purchased either. That's Sherrod Brown's, of course, own campaign coffers. That's not counting, you know, places like Act Blue and, you know, Chuck Schumer's money. By the same token, Bernie Moreno is falling way behind in the money he's personally raising.
But the Senate Leadership Fund,
that was Mitch McConnell's money that was funding that ad you played at the top.
Yeah, we were watching the Texas college football game over the weekend, and I saw an ad about Ted Cruz and his challenger, and I was like, oh, okay, interesting that this showed up on my television. But yeah, you pick up those strange ads if you're watching any kind of sports right now.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about the upcoming election. We are 2 weeks out, and Ohio's new rules for who can drop off ballots will remain in place for this election. That's according to a 4-3 decision from the state Supreme Court. Karen, so what exactly does this mean if I'm going to drop off a ballot for somebody else?
Well, the directive says that you can only drop off a ballot for yourself if you're using one of the ballot drop boxes, which, of course, there's only one ballot drop box per county. It's the Board of Elections, and they are monitored 24/7 by cameras. So if you are trying to drop off a ballot for a family member, somebody that you helped who can't get to the Board of Elections because they don't drive or whatever, you can't do that. You have to come into the Board of Elections and sign a form that says you have permission to do this. Now, there are some Boards of Elections that were providing that form out at the drop box for people. The Secretary of State has said that can't happen either. So, in the Ohio Supreme Court backed up that decision by basically saying that the people who challenged that were too late in filing their challenge. So, this order, this directive will stay. So, if you want to use a ballot drop box, you can only use it for your own ballot.
That was interesting. They really didn't rule on the merits.
I was going to say no.
This contention, yeah. It was, as I recall, the directive was late August. The litigation came almost a month later, by which time we were within a couple weeks of early voting. So the justices, and if they could punt on an easier issue, a preliminary issue, and not have to decide, go through that ugly process of deciding on the merits, they'll do it. So this, whether this is legal or illegal, Frank, the Secretary of State's directive, is really up in the air. But for this election, your protest came too late. We can't go to the booth for a review. So we're living with it through November 5th.
It's not similar on the merits, but it reminded me of a similar conclusion reached by a Georgia judge last week. A judge there ruled against a conservative push to hand count ballots, saying it's way too late to change how ballots are counted in our counties for an election.
Well, I think in Ohio we are used to I can't think of an election that's happened since I've been here that did not involve a lawsuit in some way. So we can't have elections in Ohio without lawsuits, it seems like. So I think we're used to these things, but there's still the point that things that happen late like this can be confusing to voters.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't know, I mean, we've gotten emails and calls, people asking, well, what if my if it's a couple, what if we're both in the car? Can we drop off our ballots if we're both in the car? Or, and very specific things like this because, again, people, I think, are a little bit confused.
I also should say curbside voting is an option, according to the Secretary of State's website. Quote, if someone is physically unable to enter the early voting location or polling location, two poll workers from the major political parties will bring out a ballot. So if you want to go in person and you can't get out of your car, they can come to you.
And again, just a reminder, vote by mail is still out there.
Still request a ballot.
Yes.
Although if you're going to do it that way, I'd advise...
Do it now.
Do it real soon because God love the Postal Service, but, in the past, we've seen that people mailed up days ahead of time. They did not get there in time. Plus, that deadline has been moved back to a little closer to the election. Is it 4 days now?
I think it's October 29th. So October
29th. No, I mean for the ballot to actually return.
Yeah. The last day that you can request
it has
one.
To be mailed by election day.
Yes.
Let me get that clear. But then, like, say you mail it on election day, it still has to get to the elections board. I think it's 4 days after election day.
Yeah, and the window to request an absentee ballot actually was moved back closer to the election, too. But there are folks who are still very suspicious of the mail system, some of these suspicions that carried over from 2020. And so they don't want to use the mail. They want to use a ballot drop box. But those drop boxes, again, are 24/7 monitored, and you can use them at any point during that 24/7 period, I think.
Yeah, you could drop it off at like 3 a.m. if you feel so inclined and are awake.
But the concern about making sure that your ballot gets there, you can actually track your ballot to make sure that it gets there. And if it doesn't,
through the Secretary of State's
you
website.
Can certainly ask the Board of Elections what you can do if it hasn't gotten there by election day, essentially.
Yeah, if you think it was lost in the mail. While we're on the topic of elections, the Secretary of State's office has a new tool for turnout-obsessed people like myself and probably like most of the people sitting at this table. It's called the Early Voting Data Dashboard, and it's really a treasure trove of information, Aaron. I mean, they're breaking it down by age, by party, by when you voted, what county. I mean, I really went down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, and it's interesting to compare early voting numbers to the numbers during the pandemic and see, whether we're early voting is kind of settling into what it is during a typical presidential election.
Yeah, Daryl, about as of Sunday evening, so I checked it last night because I can't help myself, about 670 ballots have been cast. And in-person early voting is ahead of where it was in 2020, but absentee requests are down. So maybe we are returning.
Well, remember 2020, folks. We were in the, you know.
That was before the vaccine was widely available. So
exactly. So there's a whole lot of people. But we are ahead, I think, in both of the, was that your story, Karen, or Joe's story about the,
that'd be me.
Head of the 2016 pace. So, see, I read your stuff.
I watch your stuff, Daryl. I watch your stuff.
Well, thank you very much.
So Karen, we're kind of figuring out.
We all love Aaron's stuff, too, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Everybody loves everyone. That's the takeaway. No, but Karen, it sounds like we're settling into a new normal.
Yeah, well, I think early voting has been popular with certain groups of people, and it's becoming more popular, I think, with other groups. The idea of rolling back early voting, you'll hear Republicans talking about that every now and then, that they want to go back to Election Day voting. Well, that's just, for a lot of people, that is just not an option that they want to consider. So I think it's interesting to look at the final, I think we've got 1.5 million ballots that have been requested so far. 668,000 have been either cast in person by mail or dropped off at a ballot drop box. So definitely people are taking advantage of this as an option.
What I was surprised by is unaffiliated voters have returned the most ballots compared to Republicans and Democrats. So unaffiliated are leading the pack.
Well, unaffiliated voters are the largest group, of course.
Yeah,
but I think
one
of the interesting things here is to look at the number of Republicans who have requested early ballots.
They're up over Democrats.
Yes, they are. And the conventional wisdom had always been that Democrats are the ones that use the early voting system. Well, not as of right now. I think to watch this and see how in-person voting goes, I mean, obviously early voting by mail is leading because we're early in this process.
Yeah.
We haven't had the big weekends of voting that I think...
We don't have weekends hours yet, right? It's next week.
I think that's right, yes.
But if I got that wrong, you can get all your reliable information on voting at voteohio.gov. It'll have all the dates, the hours, the locations, what kind of identification you need. So if you're confused at all, you can go to voteohio.gov.
Yeah, and one other thing. You know, this is actually one place where there's a little bit of tension between Ohio Republican Party and former President Trump, who, depending on speech, he seems hot or cold on mail-in voting. Local Republican Party, the state Republican Party, is not hot or cold. They're hot, you know, because they want you vote whenever you can,
they
however
They want to lock it
can.
In as soon as they
Bank
can.
Bank that vote and, you know, go ahead and do that. And they don't say anything about what Donald Trump says. They just make that assertion. You know, no matter what you've heard, do it.
Coming up, we're going to talk all about redistricting and Issue 1. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to the All Sides Reporter Roundtable, an hour where we talk all things Ohio politics. I'm your host, Anna Staver. Still with us is Karen Kassler, Bureau Chief at the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Aaron Glynn, State Government Reporter for the USA Today Network Ohio Bureau. And Daryl Rowland, Politics and Investigative Reporter for ABC. Late Friday afternoon, Governor Mike DeWine issued three reprieves, if I could say that word, of execution, moving the dates for the death penalty from 2025 to 2028. Daryl, when he will no longer be in office.
Yeah, and that'll be the tail end of the term of the next governor, whomever he or she is. Yeah, Ohio's had a de facto moratorium on the death penalty for many years now.
Since Governor DeWine took office, right? Kasich had an execution or two.
Yes. And the justification is we can't get the drugs. If we use these drugs for executions, the companies that make them say, we're not going to give them to you, excuse me, for other legitimate uses. We'll cut off your Medicare, Medicaid and all that stuff. Which may or may not be true, but as we know, other states are carrying out executions. And at the same time, we have people like Attorney General David Yost, who wants to be the next governor, along with Lieutenant Governor John Husted and others, I'm sure. Dave Yost says, let's get off the fence here. Either we're going to say, we're not going to be carry out capital punishment in Ohio, or we are, and here's how we're going to do it. If you're worried about the injections or whatever, we have nitrogen, which I don't think there is a supply problem or a legal problem, whatever. But we're in that that odd little in-between Netherland now, and we're probably, as somebody just said during the break, we'll probably be there before until Governor DeWine leaves office a little bit longer.
Yeah, Karen, this came up earlier this year when Representative Brian Stewart introduced a bill to change Ohio's method of execution to include nitrogen gas.
Yeah, and certainly people who are opposed to the death penalty were not,
they were
horrified,
happy with this
honestly.
Idea.
There were, by the way, on Kasich, there were 15 executions under Kasich. The last one that we've seen in Ohio was in 2018. We haven't seen any. And I think DeWine was pretty clear early on that this is not something that he was going to allow for. There's been different reasons over time. The concern about the federal courts ruling that it was unfair and unconstitutional punishment, that sort of thing. But yeah, I think DeWine has made it clear that he wants the legislature to make some changes, and the legislature has not done that. And you're also seeing some Republicans actually join in the annual bill or the biannual, whatever, the every session bill to ban the death penalty. You're seeing some Republicans actually join that too, including most recently Representative Jean Schmidt, who is one of the more conservative members of the legislature. And she joined the Democrats who have sponsored that bill for a long time.
Yeah, in the Senate, Christina Roegner joined, very conservative Republican. And they say it's really being pro-life all the way through life. And you know, there's been a lot of questions about whether perhaps our governor feels that way now. Well, Hasn't said so either way.
And also executions are incredibly expensive.
Oh,
and so
yeah.
You do have some Republicans who are concerned about the cost of the lawsuits and all of that as well.
Let's talk about redistricting and issue one. We're going to be voting on this in November. And last week, proponents and opponents faced off at the Columbus Metropolitan Club. For general overview, this is the fifth time the issue has come before voters in the last 20 years. And what it would do is get rid of the Ohio Redistricting Commission, which is made up of politicians, and replace it with 15 non-politicians, 5 Republicans, 5 Democrats, 5 unaffiliated. So the Vote Yes campaign was represented by former Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor, and then the opponent was State Auditor Keith Faber. So I'm going to play some clips and we'll talk about it. So here's Maureen O'Connor.
What was sold to the people in 2015 and 2018 was billed as the answer to eliminate gerrymandering. It does just the opposite. Now, why does it do just the opposite? Both 15 and 18 had embedded in those amendments, I call it the Trojan horse. The Trojan horse is the makeup of the Redistricting Commission, 7 politicians. And 7 politicians who are interested in putting party over people, creating maps that will enhance their power.
So that was former Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor. Here's Republican State Auditor Keith Faber.
Now, look, I'll be the first one to say the current system doesn't work very well. This system will make it worse. And it will make it worse because effectively what you're doing is taking the rules that traditionally you use to draw geographical districts and turning them on their head. What you're doing is taking concepts like compactness and keeping communities together and making them subservient to this concept of proportionality. Well, here's the problem, ladies and gentlemen. Ohioans don't live proportionally.
So these are the arguments we've been hearing for the last couple of months from these two groups. I wonder, as we get down to the final weeks, does it make, like, are people baked in? Does this make any difference?
Yeah, well, I think people had more set opinions on recent ballot initiatives like legalizing recreational marijuana or the Reproductive Rights Amendment. This is a complicated, kind of wonky issue, and I don't think that people feel as strongly about it as they did about the other ballot initiatives.
Karen, the only polling we've seen on this put it at 60%. I have some questions about the way that was asked of voters.
Same.
But
there was the poll. Are you talking about the poll that said, are you against or for gerrymandering?
Well, that one was at like 80%, right? Because like most people are not in favor of gerrymandering. But there was one where they explained the ballot initiative. But that's not the language that appears when people go vote.
Right. And the idea of, are you for or against gerrymandering? I mean, you've got both sides who are saying that this amendment would stop gerrymandering. Because, I mean, you see the vote no signs and the vote yes signs both say this. So I think the complicated nature of this amendment, the fact that there are three pages of ballot summary that you have to work your way through, is going to lead a lot of people to vote no. It's going to lead a lot of people to not vote at all. And I think that there is, you know, I talked to both Maureen O'Connor and somebody from the yes on one side for our TV show, The State of Ohio, the last 2 weeks. And I ask the vote no campaign, are you counting on people being confused and voting no? And of course, they say no. They hope that people will read the language and decide for themselves that this is not what they want to adopt. But I think there's a lot of frustration over how the process went, especially for people who are paying attention and close attention to it.
You know, Daryl, former President Donald Trump has weighed in on this issue. Now, it was just via, I believe, like a social media post, but he has said vote no. And I see everyone from Husted to Yost to even all the rank and file state representatives trying to share or get out the message that Trump wants you to vote no on issue one.
Well, that's right. I mean, Donald Trump is, you know, 99.9% certain to carry Ohio and may carry it by substantial.
Anywhere from 4 to 12 points.
Yeah. However big the bread box is. So, yeah, no, you want to hook your train to the locomotive that's going to win, in part. They're also making it into a partisan issue, which I think drives the supporters of the issue one a little crazy, because they do bend over backwards to try to make things bipartisan and nonpartisan. You mentioned the makeup of the panel that's eventually going to be tasked with drawing and approving the new districts. 5-5-5, that's about as even as you can get. They're going to be chosen by bipartisan elected retired judges who are going to be chosen by bipartisan members of the ballot board. Yeah, it gets long and hairy, but they are certainly trying. I think we should give them credit without bias. It's written down there. To make this, you know, as bipartisan, nonpartisan as they can. But, you know, to the former Chief Justice's point you played on the clip there, you know, she talked about how, you know, gerrymandering was built into the current process. I don't know if people would agree with that or not, because this could have worked if people of goodwill, I think, had embarked upon, you know, taking this the way voters, you know, okay, voters, we were told this is going to end gerrymandering. Sound familiar? And I think people, after many, many years, got it in Ohio. Yeah, gerrymandering be bad. We don't want it. It didn't do it. So we're going to try again with this issue. But again, if they're not people of goodwill in here, it's going to be very hard for people to come up with a workable, legitimate solution.
And O'Connor told me that when I asked her, how are you going to find, there's concerns about how you're going to find people to apply for this pool, which will be 90 people, then 45, then 15. How do you find 90 people in the state of Ohio who have no political connections, but yet are very interested in participating in this long and complicated redistricting process? And she said it's worked in other states. She feels in a state with a population of 11 million people that there will be enough people. Yes. But
it's like the 2% of people in polls that say they have no opinion on Donald Trump.
Yes. Yeah. There are people out there. Absolutely.
I've always wanted to find them.
I think that the proportionality formula is another thing that is raising some questions for the vote no side, because if you look at the proportionality formula, basically you take the last 6 years of statewide elections, and you come up with the results from that. And right now, if you just take because it'll be, they'll draw the map next year. So it'll be 2024, 2022, and 2020. So if you just take 2020 and 2022 right now, you have a breakout of about 57% Republican, 43% Democrat. Now, Maureen O'Connor says she doesn't care what the percentages are because it's the process of putting the percentages putting the formula in, not putting percentages in. But you know, that would be, for a lot of people, pretty representative. I mean, that pretty much mirrors what Donald Trump got in 2016 and 2020, 57% of the vote, essentially. I think that's right. Maybe not. But anyway.
Yeah. It's about there.
But it's not. I guess the point that is the vote yes side is making is that it's not the supermajority that we're seeing in the legislature. It's not the supermajority of 10 Republicans, 5 Democrats. Maybe that's not a supermajority in the congressional delegation.
Yeah.
That there are far more Republicans being represented in those legislative bodies than really are showing up in votes.
And Auditor Freeberg, you know, I think he has identified, I think, the key weakness, perhaps, of issue one, in that to make it proportional, and folks, all that means is, just as Karen said, if the two major party split is 57-43 Republican, then the districts should look like 57-43, at least as close as possible. Now, the hard part is, okay, you can do that. We have computers, we have algorithms, you can do that. But then those other considerations, which people, I think, regard as important as well, keeping communities together, communities of interest, being compact, you know, trying to keep cities together, things like that, then becomes more problematic because you look at the geography. If you do where the blue voters lived and the red voters lived in Ohio, it is very, very stark. And you're somehow going to draw lines to loop them in and come up with a balance. It will be that's going to be a challenge because some of these goals are a little bit contradictory. So it will be a big challenge for those 15 members.
Yeah, if you really want a deep dive ahead of Election Day, our last season of Untangled was all about redistricting. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for WOSU Untangled.
And I will kind of correct myself here. The last presidential election, 2020, Ohio was 53% Trump and 45% Biden. So I was off on my numbers, but surprisingly, that's why I'm a journalist. Math is not my strong suit.
I want to talk a little bit about Summit County. So Frank LaRose has also authorized the Summit County Board of Elections to hold a hearing into whether Congresswoman Amelia Sykes lives at the Akron address upon which she's registered or whether she instead resides in Columbus. It was a 2-2 tie on whether to investigate where she lives, and LaRose broke the tie when he notified the board Wednesday that the hearing could proceed. Now, before we get into this, Karen, I should say that you do not have to live in district for a congressional seat. She could live in Columbus and run for her seat in Akron. Now, the state house is different. You have to live in district. But that does not apply to congressional seats. But still, it is an election crime to vote on an address at which you don't live.
Yeah. I mean, the question is, would she be able to vote for herself, I guess? But this question will be answered after the election. So as far as I know, I don't expect that there is going to be a hearing before that. But this is happening around the state, too, the idea of boards of elections getting challenges for people saying you need to check the voter rolls because these people shouldn't be on them. And so I think this is part of the whole issue of whether there's voter fraud or not. I mean, voter fraud is very rare. That's been said over and over again. But yet the Republican narrative is that there is voter fraud and we need to do something about it. And so I think that may be part of, and certainly if Amelia Sykes doesn't live in Summit County, she shouldn't be voting in Summit County. But I like I said, I don't think we're going to find out the answer to that until after the election.
Yeah, residency accusations are very, very hard to prove because Ohio is very, very lenient. As I recall, it's something like if you intend to return to this address, you know, you're okay.
Yeah.
And the last dust up I remember, and Karen, you probably remember this too, was over, ironically, John Husted,
yes,
who was future Secretary of State at the time, allegedly had, you know, his address was over in Kettering, but he pretty much lived in Upper Arlington at the time. And I know there were reporters out during snow to see if there was like tracks in the snow to his house. They went to city records, how much water use there was and all that. And there were a lot of indications he did not live there, but there was never, as I recall, never a formal investigation approved.
Also, Jenna Powell got a lot of questions, particularly when she got married, whether she was living outside her district, which would have made her ineligible to run for the state house. But yeah, it cuts both ways. You do see eligibility questions come up with, where do you live? And coming up, we're going to talk about population shifts in the state and what might be ahead in the years to come. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. Still with us is Karen Kessler, Bureau Chief at the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Aaron Glynn, State Government Reporter at the USA Today Network Ohio Bureau. And Daryl Roland, Politics and Investigative Reporter for ABC. Ohio is shrinking, but the central Ohio metropolitan area is growing. That's according to a report from the Department of Development. It projects the state will lose nearly 6% of its population by 2050, or about as many people have voted early in this election so far. It says it will affect mostly large swaths of urban, rural, and Appalachian counties, and nearly all of them located in the northern end of the state. You know, Daryl, it's interesting because Central Ohio, you know, we all live here in Columbus, right? And Central Ohio is booming and growing. Delaware County grew by 22% in the last census. But it isn't new people moving into the state. It's people from around the state moving to Central Ohio.
Yeah, and it's, you know, if you don't get out, you know, beyond the outer belt or beyond the, you know, the counties adjoining the outer belt, this could be mass, because, you know, we drive around Central Ohio, we see the construction towers, we see, wow, when did they build that?
Or, you get stuck in traffic.
Yeah, well, that too. Yeah, the old COVID traffic law, I think, has officially ended, and we're back to the old jams, even with a lot of telecommuting. But this, I mean, you know, it has all sorts of social ramifications, which, you know, the Dispatch chronicled very well. Think of Ohio's political power here. My goodness, we had 24, 25 electoral votes not all that long ago. We're down to 15 already. And again, these are all, there's always 535 electoral votes. So as we shrink, others will reap Ohio. We may not have much political power. Now, maybe that means nothing to folks, but when we had more votes, we had people on Appropriations Committee, it seemed like they brought a lot of cash, a lot of projects to Ohio.
You know, Karen, what I find interesting is you look at a place like Cleveland. They used to have almost 1 million people. Now they're down to 300,000, but they still have the infrastructure for 1 million.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was obviously from my voice just there this weekend. So, yeah, there's still, and there's building going on. I mean, I think there's a lot of attempt to try to bring people back into the city. And I think that's happening in Columbus, too, with the idea of trying to bring people from the suburbs into the downtown, the core of downtown. But I also think that there was a lot of hope that, like, the Intel project and the whole Silicon Heartland would bring a lot more people into the state. But I think that that's may not be the case.
Or at least, yeah, for all the growth that we're seeing in Central Ohio, Aaron, it doesn't seem like we're getting a lot of out-of-state transplants. Like, I used to live in Denver, and Denver is booming, but Denver is booming because people from out-of-state are moving to Colorado.
Right. It seems like people are moving from within Ohio. Like, Warren County was one of the counties that's really growing in suburban Cincinnati. And you're also seeing, you know, more an aging population, less people are having kids, there's more deaths than births. And it's interesting because there are cities in Ohio like Springfield where their main population increase is coming from immigration.
That's a whole other conversation, especially this election cycle. The 2024 State of Poverty Report shows that the number of people, Ohioans living in poverty, is staying pretty steady. But it seems to be the number of children living in poverty that's causing concern. Karen, what do community action agencies want lawmakers to do about it?
Well, they have a couple of ideas. And when I talked to Phil Cole, who's the head of the agency, or the head of the group representing all 48 of those community action agencies, he had a couple of suggestions that I really am not sure will be picked up right away. I mean, things like paying contractors to build affordable housing, increasing allowances for SNAP benefits, though he did say that that had been increased, but he wants a bigger increase. Mm-hmm. Paying medical students costs if they commit to staying in Ohio, because there are 13 counties in Ohio that are maternity care deserts. So there's no opportunity for women who are pregnant to receive that maternity care, and a lot of those areas are indeed low-income areas. So he made a comment about how the legislature has been very interested in income tax cuts and tax cuts in general, and making the well-off better off doesn't solve the problem for people who are at the bottom rungs.
Let's shift to a perennial issue of the roundtable, former Ohio House Speaker Larry Householder. So, Daryl, a Franklin County judge has ruled that the House Republicans are on the hook for a $1.6 million lease on office space that Householder used for his political operation. So, for the quick refresher, Householder is in prison for a federal bribery conviction. But before that, he was leasing space in the Chase Tower, and apparently House Republicans got to pay those bills.
From folks I've talked to, pretty palatial space as well.
Must be nice.
Yeah, big window overlooking, downtown Columbus and everything. Yeah, so the Householder, the HB6 scandal, all that stuff lives on in yet another way. This was something that Larry Householder himself decided to do, but the party's going to have to pay the bills, or the caucus, I should say, the Republican caucus, which is their political organization, is going to pay the bills. I mean, I'm sure it'll be challenged and appealed and all that good stuff, so it won't be checks cut today or tomorrow, certainly. But a bit of irony in there, more than a bit of irony. So, there's another big chunk that could have gone toward campaigns.
And more fallout from the whole House Bill 6 corruption scandal. Yeah, once again, it's not over.
No.
It's got legs, as they say.
Yeah, it's a... I don't know. It's interesting, but I get it, right? He signed a lease. He made a contract. He did it as the leader of the House Republican Party at the time, and that's how it goes sometimes in contract law. But we'll see. I'm sure they'll appeal and eventually we'll get resolution. The U.S. Department of Justice is monitoring voting in Portage County, part of Northeast Ohio, after the Republican sheriff there was accused of intimidating voters. For those who don't remember, he made comments on his personal Facebook account about what you should do if you see residents who have Harris Walls campaign signs in their yards. So, do we know what exactly the federal election monitors are going to do and why they're being dispatched, other than, this upset some people in Portage County?
Well, I think there's a real concern about voter intimidation and looking into that. I mean, these signs, obviously that post has been taken down now, and the sheriff, who is also running for re-election, has been removed from election security detail, and he's put up another post saying that, he stands, essentially, I think he stands by what he says, but that,
But he was saying it as his personal, yes, not as the sheriff.
Yes. And, but I think that there were enough people, and there were some hearings that were covered by my colleagues at IdeaStream in Cleveland, some public meetings where people were very concerned, very upset, said that this was potentially threatening to them. And so,
right, they didn't want to put a yard sign out.
Right. And so obviously those kind of issues are concerning, because you don't know about voter suppression in the sense that you don't know why people don't vote. If they don't vote, it's hard to track them. So,
Yeah, so we'll have to wait and see, but it sounds like the federal election monitors will be there in the county making sure everything goes as smoothly as possible.
Yeah, kind of unusual for Ohio, too.
Yeah.
You think of the DOJ and the civil rights folks being in southern counties or North Carolina, whatever, but Portage County, home of Kent State University, of course.
And Portage County, good school, I hear. Been one of those counties that has swung back and forth too. Ohio has a couple of counties like that that will go one way and then the pendulum will swing back the other way.
I want to take a quick moment to acknowledge the fact that President Jimmy Carter, who turned 100 this year, has fulfilled his wish of living long enough to vote in this election. He said that he was excited to cast an absentee ballot for Democratic candidate Kamala Harris, according to his grandson. Carter's ballot was deposited at a drop box in Georgia. But Karen, Joe Ingles, your colleague, wrote about what would happen if somebody did that here and then potentially passed away before Election Day. Now, nobody's saying that former President Carter is going to die before Election Day. We all hope that he makes it. But what does happen in that situation?
Well, if you cast that ballot, and it gets there, it will be counted. And you know, there's...
So as long as you vote, you can pass away before Election Day.
Yes, and you... voting rolls cannot be really altered, I believe, I think it's 90 days before the election or something like that. So I don't think that your death would be allowed to be... You as a voter would be allowed to be removed from the voter rolls during that period. But yeah, Secretary of State Frank LaRose talked to... Joe and said that basically once you drop that ballot in, they can't pull it back and try to sever you from your ballot. Like, you can look up anybody's voting record. You just can't see how they voted.
Yeah.
And so that's the kind of thing there where it'd be really impossible to get that back and cancel that vote out if somebody had died.
Right, because it's all... once it's determined to be a legal vote, then you remove the what they call the secrecy envelope, which has all the biographical and identifying information from the ballot itself, which has none of that. That ballot goes in with, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of others.
And it's off.
And you're counting that ballot no matter what at that point.
Aaron, Democrats say Springfield and Clark County suffered millions of dollars in economic damage because of the false claims by former President Trump and J.D. Vance about immigrants in their community. Can you tell us a little bit about some of those numbers?
Yeah, so Democrats want a complete accounting of all the economic consequences from the fallout in Springfield. Springfield schools and businesses received dozens of bomb threats. Students had to be escorted into school by the Ohio State Patrol. The Ohio State Patrol said that it cost them about $50,000 in overtime. Their salaries, of course, are already accounted for. So Democrats are really looking to get a full picture of the economic consequences there.
Yeah, House Minority Leader Allison Russo from here in Upper Arlington is basically urging Governor DeWine to figure out what the total cost was for the school closures, for the restaurant closures, for the like bomb sniffing dogs that had to come out and sweep places.
And also the Ohio Patrol that came out to work at the schools. It's really hard to come up with the emotional toll that this took and is still taking on the community. I mean, I don't think the bomb threats are still out there, but certainly this is still a conversation. I mean, even though city officials have over and over and over said this is not, these false and racist rumors aren't true, they still are happening. And the question, too, is whether Donald Trump in the next 2 weeks will come out to Springfield as he has promised. And city officials have said, don't do that. We're already strained and stressed. But if he comes out, that's another whole bunch of additional costs.
So far, there's no plans on the horizon, Daryl, for him to come out.
Well, I'm not sure Donald Trump's own people know his plans.
That's fair.
On the horizon. He did promise to come. He said he would come in.
He went to Aurora, Colorado.
Within 2 weeks to Springfield. And that's, I think, a Wednesday. That's going to be like 4 or 5 weeks ago. But yeah.
Has he been
he often.
This election cycle?
I'm sorry?
Has Trump been here this election cycle?
For Bernie Moreno, he was
here.
Oh,
yes. Yeah. Other than that, yeah.
But I don't think we expected it because, as Daryl said, Trump is likely to win the state of Ohio, and so he's spending his time campaigning in swing states.
Right. If you want to see
Kamala Harris.
Yes. If you want to see Kamala Harris or Trump, you should probably travel up to Michigan or Pennsylvania. They're probably going to be back there a lot in the next couple of weeks.
It's only 2 weeks left.
I know.
Only 2 weeks.
We hope.
Well, okay.
Probably
good point.
2 weeks left, 3 weeks till we have a winner. But that was Daryl Rowland, politics and investigative reporter for ABC. Thank you.
It's good to be working with you again, Anna.
And thanks to Karen Kassler, bureau chief at the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau.
Again, sorry about my voice, but go Guardians.
Always next year. Always next year. Yeah. It's never been said about Cleveland before, right?
As a Mets fan, I commiserate with you on this one. It's unfair. It should have been Guardians versus Mets.
Yes.
And finally, thank you to Aaron Glynn, state government reporter at the USA Today Network Ohio Bureau.
Happy Monday, everybody.
And thank you all for listening to All Sides, right here on 89.7 NPR News.